one of the groups of questions as quickly as I can. All right. The military personnel at the Pentagon must know that a 757 didn't hit that building. Have they said anything?
They said a 757 did hit the building. I could elaborate a little bit. In the New Pearl Harbor Revisited, Chapter 2, I deal with the Flight 77 and the attack on the Pentagon. And I show that witnesses at the scene show that they came over there and said, hey, the building's been hit by an airliner. Let's go see the airliner. And they get over there and, well, where's the plane? You'd think you'd see a tail section, an engine, these indestructible engines. Don't see anything. One of our reporters, who since died, put him in the book, he was somehow able to get inside the building. And he said, well, there was no plane in there either. And then he said, well, the fire got so hot it just vaporized. And insofar as there was an official story, it was kind of a semi-official story, the plane vaporized, including those titanium engines. And people will look at us and say, oh, you guys believe in magic.
There are quite a few questions of this general character. I'll read the best one. Mearsheimer and Walt, in 2006, wrote the book The Israeli Lobby, or The Israel Lobby, where they claim that without the Israel Lobby and the neocons, we would not have gone to war with Iraq in 2003. Do you think that Israel had any role in 9/11?
Okay, there are two parts to that question. One is about the Israel Lobby and whether it was decisive in getting us to go to war in Iraq. The answer to that is clearly yes. And no less an authority than Philip Zelikow, who was the author of the 9/11 report, reported that, said, well, we basically went to war in Iraq for Israel. This was called, I quote this in that same book, New Pearl Harbor. I think I quoted in the first book, New Pearl Harbor Revisited. I think I quoted it clear back in the original New Pearl Harbor. In any case, so that point is not in dispute. It doesn't get a lot of publicity. In fact, the name of the story was that he called it the truth that dare not speak its name, or something like that. Now, the second question is much more difficult. One position at one end of the spectrum was simply people will say the Jews did it, Mossad did it, Israel did it. Well, that suggests they were in operational control. No evidence of that I've seen. And no need for that. Our military, Pentagon, is perfectly capable of these kind of operations. They practice these things. There were war games going on there. I mean, they do these war games all the time. So, not that they didn't screw up a lot of things that morning. I've got a whole book, 9/11 Contradictions, about 25 of the screw-ups where they've got self-contradictory stories. So, but in the sense of just pulling off the physical part of the operation, they didn't need any help. At the opposite end of the spectrum is the question, well, did Israel know? Got evidence of that. They're the dancing Israelis. You can, if you don't know about that, you can Google them on the web. But a lot of people go from foreknowledge to operational control. Well, that's a big logical leap. A lot of places surely had foreknowledge. Blair surely had foreknowledge. But nobody's saying the Brits did it. So, now, something more in between. Was Israel in any way directly involved in the operation? It does seem that some Israeli citizens were involved. In fact, this American Mohammed Atta, girlfriend that he lived with, Amanda, said one day she was talking to him and something about, something came up and he started speaking Hebrew. So, and then one of the two Ziad Jarrahs, the so-called pilot of Flight 93, there's some evidence that he was Israeli. I have not checked that out very strongly myself. I've taken the word of a careful researcher who said that, but I'm speaking there secondhand. So it looks like somewhere in between is probably the truth. But I've been gathering a bunch of information, and I do plan to do further research on this. So this is a very tentative statement on my part. A lot of the things I say I'm very confident in. In fact, even though I was a philosophy professor in one of the fields with epistemology, which is, you know, what do you know and how do you know it? You learn that there are very few things you can say, I know. You can say, I'm firmly convinced, I have a lot of evidence for this, but to say, I know, because knowledge means justified true belief. You can't know something unless it's true. And the belief that is true has to be justified by the evidence. So those are very stringent conditions. So there aren't a whole lot of things where I would say, I know, but I will say, I know Building 7 came down because of explosives.
All right. We're getting many more questions than he'll be able to get to, but we're going to get to as many as we can, and we drop dead at 9 o'clock. Has there ever been an investigation of insurance fraud of any of the WTC buildings or other buildings around Ground Zero?
No. Then I can elaborate. Not that I know of.
I agree with the fact that 9/11 was not carried out by Muslims. But the question I have is, how do you think this lie, the official story, continues to be believed by the general public?
Well, they're not, for the most part, exposed to these facts. People who use alternative sources of information, check out things on the internet. But it is very difficult to get stuff in the mainstream press. And I'm not talking about getting the mainstream press to support our theories. I'm just talking about reporting the evidence that we found and letting people judge for themselves. As I said, I've written now 9 books about 9/11. And you would think, just kind of a priori, here's a philosopher, religion, and theologian, pretty well respected in his field. And here he comes along. You know, he's not what you'd call a professional conspiracy theorist, you know, whatever that means. I mean, like Philip Delicat, there is a professional conspiracy theorist. And so you would think, isn't this remarkable? This guy goes from doing his philosophy, religion, and theology, in which he's made a pretty good reputation. In fact, what he hopes to do before he dies is write his systematic theology. But here he takes off all these years to deal with this. Maybe we could review one of his books. Well, the problem with reviewing one of those books is the general public learns about the book, and then they can read it, and then they can believe it, because they can see the evidence is simply overwhelming. Now, we're doing much better in other countries. You can go on the web and find research librarian in Victoria, BC, has written 2 stories recently about the changing media attitudes towards 9/11 in the world, but what she means is in the world except in the United States. So in Canada, in European countries, in Japan, you can get coverage of these things. Niels Herrick, who is professor of dental chemistry at U.S. Copenhagen, they've done, I think, 8 major newspaper and television interviews with him. So he's just allowed to talk to the public. And sure, they'll bring on somebody to try to rebut him, but he gets to tell his evidence. A couple months ago, you can go on Google, you can find this, there's the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting has a program, very highly rated program, called the Fifth Estate. You understand what that means? That means they take seriously the idea, his old quaint idea, that the press should hold the government accountable, keep them honest. And they interviewed us. They interviewed me, interviewed Richard Gage, they interviewed Daniel Sunjata from Rescue Me, and they just let us tell our evidence without interrupting, without smirking, without saying, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Not only that, when I told my Barbara Olson story, when I said, 0 seconds, they put up the graphic on the tube so the audience could see I wasn't making it up. I was reporting exactly what the FBI graphic said. So, the percentage of people who don't believe the official story is considerably higher in Canada now, and you can be sure it's much higher in Denmark now, and in several European countries, the major financial magazine that came out with a very strong story, reporting all the, some of the strong evidence against the official story, and so on. So that's the main reason, is that our press has not been doing its job. These are just, you know, my book, 9/11 Contradictions, in many ways my favorite book, because I wrote it because people would say, oh, well, you know, you're not going to get the press or politicians to deal with conspiracy theory, because if they look like they're sympathetic to conspiracy theorists, they lose their office. They might even lose their job if they're in the courts. These things happen. And, you know, they have to feed the families. And so I wrote a book just called 9/11 Contradictions. I was very clear. This is not conspiracy theory, because there's no theory in the book of any sort. It just reports facts. It just reports that Mineta said Cheney came down to there. He was already there at 9:20 when I got down to the underground bunker in the White House. And the 9/11 Commission report says that he didn't get down there until almost 10 o'clock. And that's a pretty stark contradiction. Besides that, because many other people said the same thing as Mineta. I got one reporter whom I talked to personally, and I said to him, come on. I mean, this is your job. Could you not report just this factual contradiction? He reported it. Michael Powell. Not a single other newspaper picked it up. It just died, as they say. Didn't have legs.
This is a good segue to these questions. Given that there is a government media conspiracy at the highest levels regarding 9/11, what hope do we have that truth will come out and high-level people will be punished? And what's the best thing that we should do to confront this situation?
Oh boy, there's a simple question. Well, the simple question is very difficult to answer. This is the hardest thing. I know. It's easy to kind of get the truth, but to answer the question, how do we deal with this massive problem we have in this country? It's very difficult. So I'm putting my eggs in the foreign baskets. I'm hoping that Japan, a friendly country, it doesn't help too much if Iran says 9/11 was an inside job. The president of Iran has asked the UN to instigate an investigation into 9/11. I would be, you know, that's another route. The UN should do this. Ahmadinejad is right. The UN should do it. But they're probably not going to do it at Ahmadinejad's suggestion. Very difficult for the UN to buck the United States. Canada could do it. You could have a group, the Canadians and the Europeans and the Japanese could get together and give some of their highest, you know, most blue ribbon, credible individuals, all their Walter Cronkites, or people that are held in high esteem, and have them hold an investigation, not in the sense of, you know, 3-year investigation, bucks and millions of dollars, but just listening to the evidence. So we would give our evidence, and then people defending the official story would give their evidence. We would debate it back and forth until we settled each point and move on to another point. We know who would win that debate. Also, the government knows who would win that debate. So they won't do it. But if it's publicly announced, and then Philip Zelikow and Kane Hamilton and on and on down the list, all the guys from NIST, guys and gals, refuse to go, that's pretty telling. Now that's already happened. It was down in South Carolina. The same guy that called the FBI and asked about Osama bin Laden had some money, and he was setting up a debate. He says, we got seven of us from the movement to agree to come to South Carolina, all expenses paid, at a resort hotel, pretty attractive. And then he invited the 9/11 Commission. He invited all of the workers at NIST, all the scientists there. Not a single one would come. And he wrote back, and he said to NIST, the same Michael Newman, who knew why they didn't look for thermite, and said, well, if the dates I proposed are not good, I can change the dates. So just tell me what dates would suit you. Newman writes back, NIST will not debate this in public with anybody. So, and the same thing, you get radio people call us up, Tom Hartman, and other people say, you know, we'd like to have a really high-level debate. Who would debate you? Nobody. They can't find anybody who will come on and debate one of the leading people in the United States. So that's the problem. So if we could get an investigation by the European Canadian government, we know how to turn out. So I'm hoping we can move forward on that. So that's my best solution.
Right, here's a really simple one. How do you account for the fact that no one pushed the hijack button that's on all modern aircraft?
Oh, well, that's what I was talking about. The Sherlock Holmes story, the 7500. And it's very puzzling. Some people think, well, maybe they didn't have time, or maybe they panicked, or, and in a brief little period of time. Well, according to the official story, it took the 30 seconds to break into the cabin on flight 993. So you got two highly trained pilots. They know if this is what they're trained to do. So the only way to account for the fact that they didn't do it is because the whole thing didn't happen. There were no hijackers. There were no people banging on the door to come into the cockpit.
All right, we have a couple of questions here, so my apologies to the one that I don't read, but they're essentially the same. After being curtailed in the final years of Taliban rule, heroin production has skyrocketed during the U.S.-led coalition occupation of Afghanistan. Can you comment on the possibility that it is the heroin trade, a $47 billion industry, that is the true rationale for the American-led invasion and ongoing occupation of Afghanistan?
Yes. I oversimplified in my presentation in the interest of time, but I said we are there for motives other than the official rationale. I gave one of those motives, the pipeline. But if you look at just the rise and fall of the opium production, it's very hard to resist the conclusion that we want the opium production to continue. Now, why would we want to do that? Well, that's a big topic. But Peter Dale Scott, who was my co-author, co-editor of one of the books, 9/11 and the American Empire, Intellectuals Speak Out, he is an expert on that. He's got a book called Cocaine Politics. So I would recommend that to you. There's some other people who have written. If you just Google cocaine or opium as a motive for Afghan war, you Brzezinski had talked about that in a book several years ago, saying that if America wanted to continue its preeminence, it needed to get control of Central Asia around the Caspian Sea area, partly for oil and for other reasons too. So, as far as I know, those are the big three. There may be still some other. Well, I mean, now there's Pakistan. There is a real problem in Pakistan now that we let them have nuclear weapons many years ago while they were our friends, and now they're not so friendly. Just as we allowed Israel to get that one is a very complicated story, but it's more obvious that we deliberately allowed Pakistan to get the weapons, and now they're a big problem for us because we fear that they will get taken over, the country get controlled by people who might actually use them.
Okay, David, we've got a lot of questions here. On the fourth one down, I could get fired for asking you this question. So if you talk really fast, we'll get to it. And if you talk really slow, we won't get to it. So this is up to you. All right. What are your thoughts on how 9/11 relates to peak oil? And what are your thoughts on the work of Michael Rupert and the effects of peak oil on social cohesion?
Oh, sure. This is about, I mean, it's largely about oil, not entirely, but it's largely about oil, and that's partly because it appears to be running out. This is debated, people debate, but surely it's going to run out sometime unless the theory is right that it's perpetually self-generating down there. So certainly I think Rupert was right on about that.
Right very fast. Does a state attorney general have a standing to bring a 9/11 related lawsuit?
I'm not an expert on that. My answer would be, I sure hope so.
Okay, I grew up with and knew Tom Burnett, and ask it in his honor and in his memory, and in respect for Tom Sr. and the rest of the Burnett family. The question is, what happened to his plane? Please speculate on his fate. Tom Burnett, it doesn't have the name of who said it, but he's all right to go to you.
Would the person who wrote that note identify yourself to me after the meeting? I'd really like to talk to you.
That's for later.
Yeah, so what really happened to Flight 93, that is just one of the biggest, probably the biggest mystery. We just don't really have a clue. All we know is the official story. There were clearly two planes there. It seems very clear because some people report the plane was going this way, another report was going this way. There were two crash sites. CNN recorded that. They said, well, here's the crash site here. Of course, there's no plane. But there's another area down there that's cordoned off. And we can't get in there. So probably the real plane is there. And we've got an abundant evidence that a plane was shot down. We even have pilots who got off the plane, the ones who were flying to New York, and they got off and they said, we heard that the military shot down a plane in Pennsylvania. So there's a given that evidence in both the New Pearl Harbor visited.
Rumsfeld said it on camera.
Well, it's a tricky one. Look that up in my book. Anyways.
This will be the last question because the throw will fail, and David will go downstairs and sign some books afterwards, but this will be the last question here. And there are two versions. One talks about feuding between Alex Jones and Noam Chomsky, but the most concise is, can you explain the silence and cowardice of the so-called peace movement and the so-called left progressive community on this topic?
I would not use those words because I'm not a mind reader. I don't know what's going on. disappointing, I can say that one of the motives for this tour was to see if my tour could help bring the 9/11 Truth Movement, its efforts to stop these wars, together with the more traditional peace movements who also want to bring these wars to an end. It seems like it is very nice if we could work together.
Thus far, I should say, you know, there are a lot of traditional peace people who are supporters of the 9/11 Truth Movement. I think Richard Falk wrote the foreword for my first book. Howard Zinn wrote words for two of my books. William Sloan Coffin endorsed my work just shortly before he died. And you look at the words, go on Amazon.com and read all those words. You'll see a lot of leftist peace people have done it, but a lot have not, and a lot have even decried our movement and claimed, and this is what they say, and I can only take it at their word. They believe that, well, this is the way that two of them put it, that we've worked so hard, we on the left, worked so hard to build up our credibility. And now you 9/11 truthers come along and destroy the credibility of the left. There's so many things wrong with that rationale. Yeah. One is that the 9/11 Truth Movement isn't particularly a left movement. Some of us identify with the left, but who has endorsed more of my works than Paul Craig Roberts, libertarian member of the Reagan administration? A lot of the people are traditional conservatives who really believe in traditional Republican principles. So it's not, but that's the image they have. And it was George Monbiot who most clearly articulated this, but also Alexander Colbert. And secondly, you know, one could ask, well, how much credibility have they had? I mean, they haven't been very effective in this. And thirdly, we've got extremely strong empirical evidence. And I say we now have proof. We have overwhelming empirical evidence that the Fisher story is false. So how could it destroy their credibility to join forces with us and expose these facts to a big part of the world that reads their material? It's very seldom that a peace movement has the kind of empirical evidence that we have, that we can provide to them. We're saying, here, we've done all this work, been working on this for all these years, take it.